Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on air. Presented by Ger Sweeney.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to another edition of the Irish programme live on air. I do hope I find you well. Let's get it correct from the start, shall we? And I hope it was a good week for you. Enjoying the new freedoms, hopefully, as the various phases are passing in both Ireland and in Spain. And nice to be back on the golf course for me. Oh yeah, golf courses. As you know, the programme broadcast on a weekly basis from Ireland since the lockdown, and the golf courses opened last week in Ireland. And it was lovely to be able to be back out on a couple of occasions. And we'll say no more about that now before I get myself into a whole pile of trouble. This evening on the programme, I hope that you will stay with me until 7 o'clock because I think we've got a nice programme lined up for you. I'm going to be talking to a man by the name of Dr. Paul Nolan. And Paul Nolan has been researching life in Northern Ireland. And he's a researcher, basically. And he has an idea that there has been what he calls an outbreak of kindness in Northern Ireland. And the COVID-19 crisis has brought both sides of the sectarian divide in Northern Ireland together for the first time in his living memory. We'll find out more about his ideas and his thoughts on that during the programme. Me old pal Kevin Keane has been putting pen to paper in relation to the COVID-19 crisis. He'll be joining us as well to tell us what he has written down. We'll have a look at the famous Irish birthdays now very shortly. These are birthdays that well-known Irish people will be celebrating or will be marking over the next 7 days. I'll be playing for you a lot of good Irish music, including the number one song from this very day, the 25th of May. Ah, lads, it's never the 25th of May, is it already? End of May? Wow. That means that next Monday is the 1st of June, I hear. Anyway, the number one song in Ireland on this day, back in 1965. So there you have it. That's what's coming up. As always, if you'd like to get in contact with me for anything that you think we should be looking at in relation to the programme, I would be more than happy to hear from you. You can text. No, sorry, you can't because I don't have access to the text while I'm in Ireland. You can email ger@tre.radio. That's ger@tre.radio. Simple as that. Will we take a look at the famous Irish birthday? So to kick us off on this Monday evening, today, the 25th of May, Cillian Murphy, wonderful actor that he is, was born in Douglas in Cork in 1976 on this day. John Hunt, medieval art expert and Hunt Museum founder, unfortunately no longer with us. He was born in Dublin. Sorry, he wasn't. He was born in Limerick in 1900. If you're familiar with Limerick, you may be familiar with the Hunt Museum. If you're not, check it out online. And it is an absolutely wonderful resource to have in Limerick. Ivana Bacek, a politician and academic, born in Dublin on this day back in 1968. And Helen Blackburn, women's rights campaigner, one of the very early women's rights campaigner, born in Valencia Island, just off County Kerry in 1842. Stumbled over that one, Ger. I did. Tomorrow, Tuesday, Kate O'Brien, the poet, was born on that day in 1948. On Wednesday, Mick Dunn, late sports commentator working with RTE, was born in 1929. Thursday of this week is the 28th of May, and Thomas Moore, the poet, was born in Dublin in 1779. Ryan Tubridy, TV and radio presenter, born in Dublin in 1973. Dervil O'Rourke, one of our finest athletes, born in Cork in 1981. Maeve Binchy, fabulous novelist, born in Dublin in 1940. And Thomas Croke, he was an art Bishop or a bishop, or he was a clergyman anyway, but it's his name that was given to Croke Park. He was born in Cork in 1824. Next Friday is the 29th, and Aoife Mulholland, the actor, was born in Galway in 1978 on that day. Next Saturday is the 30th of May. Cullum Meaney, the actor, was born in Dublin in 1953. Colm Tobin, the writer, born in Enniscorthy in 1946. And finally, next Sunday is the 31st of May. John Connolly, the novelist, was born in Dublin on that day in 1968. Mary O'Rourke, former politician, still very much alive. She's a good old age now. She'd be 83 this year. She was born in Athlone in 1937. I heard her on the national airwaves not so long ago, giving some advice and talking about COVID-19. Colin Farrell, the actor, born in Dublin in 1976. And John Sean Kelly, author and broadcaster, born on the 31st of May in 1965. And that is it, our birthday file for this week. If you happen to be celebrating your birthday this coming week, can I wish you a very happy birthday? And if somebody in your world is celebrating a birthday, we wish them birthday greetings as well. You can, of course, let me know in advance of birthdays if you'd like me to give somebody a mention, ger@tre.radio. And if I can, I certainly will give them a mention for you. Now, surprisingly enough, there is no musical birthday in there. So I'm going to take a track from a man whose birthday we mentioned last week on the programme. A fellow by the name of Alan Milligan, and that's not his stage name. His stage name is Yelpy, Y-E-L-P-Y. And I told you last week that if I got a chance, I would play a track from him because I haven't played him on the programme before. So I'm going to do that right now. And here he is with a smashing song. It's called Save Me.
She burns like the sun. She burns like the sun. She burns like the sun, like a star. She moves like the wind. She moves like the wind. She moves like the wind, like a storm. Like a storm. She feels like my walls. She feels like my walls. She feels like my world. Like I'm home. And I am buying in her life. I am buying it. And then she
Milligan. He trades, as the man says, under the name of Yelpy. That's a song called Save Me. He's got a lot of music on YouTube. He probably has on Spotify and other platforms as well. So check him out if you liked what you heard just now. Yelpy, Save Me. Right, that's it. I'm going to take a quick break. Come back to me just after that. And I will introduce for you Dr. Paul Nolan.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. A man by the name of Andy Pollock produces a regular blog under the name Two Irelands. If you haven't seen it, or if you're not aware of it, just Google Two Irelands, Andy Pollock, and there's some wonderful blogs and thoughts and ideas going back a number of years on that particular one. I look forward to having a chat with Andy at some point in the future. But a recent blog that he produced was surrounding a letter that he received from his friend Paul Nolan, or Dr. Paul Nolan, in relation to COVID-19 and Northern Ireland. As I mentioned at the top of the programme, Dr. Nolan is a researcher, and during the week I caught up with him to have a conversation about the letter that he sent to Andy Pollock relating to his thoughts that among the two communities in Northern Ireland there has been what he calls an outbreak of kindness. Dr. Paul Nolan, you're welcome to the programme and thank you for taking time to talk to us today.
Thank you.
Can I start firstly with asking you about the research work that you've been conducting and how long you've been doing that and the nature basically of what you do?
Well, basically I've been doing it all my life. I mean, I would be described as, I suppose, a recovering academic. That is to say, if I had any decency, I'd be retired. I used to work at Queen's University. And after I retired, I continued to research and was employed for a time to monitor the Northern Ireland peace process. So that meant I had to look at the trends, observe where the strains were within the society in terms of inequalities in education or the labour market, look at patterns of violence, look at the growth or the shrinkage of the paramilitaries, all of those sorts of things. And it's just become a habit of mind of mine to kind of look at what's happening. And when the coronavirus crisis began, one of the things that puzzled me was why Northern Ireland's rates were so low. That was comparative to the UK. And then I looked at them in relation to the Republic of Ireland, and there was a strange sort of paradox in it all, in that the South seemed to have acted with alacrity. They were much faster in with lockdown. They had a much better policy of testing. And the feeling grew up here, certainly amongst the nationalist population, that if only we were with the South, they're doing it better. The curiosity in it was that actually the figures were pretty much the same across the island. And so I began to wonder, well, why should that be so? And long story short on that one, it seems to be that the things that really shielded us in Ireland, North and South, were things that were beyond the reach of government policy, things to do primarily with the fact that we're an island. And when you look at places that have been successful, like New Zealand or Singapore, I mean, it is much easier actually to protect a country that is an island. So I think that was the primary factor. But along with that, you've got things like population density, much, much lower in Ireland than in England, and the age structure of the population, which means that you take all of this together and we ended up with pretty much the same figures as you might expect from the population ratios. Essentially, at the moment, the number of COVID deaths in the north have been about 600. In the south, have been about 1,600. Now, that means Northern Ireland's at about 28% of the deaths. And that's the most reliable statistic. It's so difficult to make comparisons, but deaths are... those are hard figures. So we account for about 28% of the deaths on the island of Ireland, which is in line with our population ratio. We are 28% of the population of the island. I was talking to Andy Pollock about this, and he said to me that actually the perception in the south was that it was terrible up north. And he said that's partly because there's always a perception in the south that it's terrible up north.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, it's grim up north. And I said to him, well, it's not actually. I mean, in comparative terms, I mean, obviously, we're living through a catastrophe. So you're talking about small degrees of difference. And in a way, it's, you know, that phrase that's sometimes used to describe conflict between ethnic communities or national groups, the narcissism of small or minor difference. That people were making much of very small differences north and south. They're just the sort of regional patternings you would expect. But I did say to him that the thing I'd noticed, and it's a hard thing to produce evidence for, but when you're here, it's very real, is a huge amount of social cohesion and social solidarity. So that, for example, if I step out from my front door and walk down my street in South Belfast, all my neighbours are extremely courteous in the way in which we all contrive to avoid each other, mm-hmm. give each other a wide berth. And there's sort of pleasing paradox about this, that the way you show social solidarity is by going out of your way to avoid each other.
That's right, yeah.
But, you know, beyond that, we've got the Thursday night clapping for carers, which is really a big thing here, and everybody comes out and, you know, we clap our hands and we bang our saucepans, and that's been solid every Thursday night. You walk on down the street, there's notices pinned to trees, photographs, coloured wool, rainbows in the windows, and that's across both communities. And you've got the appearance then of new murals appearing in Belfast.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Belfast, the writing is always on the wall.
Yeah.
Look to the murals to find out what's going on.
Mm.
And usually we've got masked figures on our murals, paramilitaries. And this time we've got masked figures on our walls, and they're not paramilitaries. They're nurses and they're doctors. And their slogans, support the NHS. And I noticed them first in Protestant East Belfast, and they came with a little bit of, I think, quite understandable pride in the British identity. That
the NHS.
British. But interestingly, they began to appear also in nationalist areas, on the Falls Road and on Derry, you know, the famous Free Derry Wall in the Bogside.
Yeah.
That's painted over with a support the NHS mural. And, of course, they don't carry the Union Jack flag the way they do in the Protestant areas, but it's the same message. And you know what? Nobody is actually bothered about the old sectarian division. For a moment, the first time, actually, that I can remember, people have decided to park that, forget about it.
Really?
So you get controversies on the morning radio shows, but the controversies are all about should the schools open or should they remain closed for a longer period? Are the police being too interventionist in the way in which they're moving people on? When's the lockdown going to end? Those are the kind of controversies. There's no sectarian element. Now, that doesn't mean that you wouldn't get it within the government.
I was just going to ask you that, because what you're seeing on the streets may not be replicated with the power-sharing executive, because it's all about, we seem to think in the South particularly that it's one upmanship on a constant basis.
Exactly. And the converse is also true. If you get divisions in the executive, they're not necessarily representative of a breakdown of relations between the two communities, because there's a very complex a political game that has to be played in the Stormont Assembly. And it has to be played because of the very curious constitutional engineering of the Good Friday Agreement, which means that all parties are in the government at once. And so they have to form a policy. Now, that means that you've got, you know, parties like the Democratic Unionist Party and the Ulster Unionist Party in a coalition with Sinn Féin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil would rather die in a ditch than share power with Sinn Féin.
Or give it to them.
But exactly. Yeah. And the phrase die in a ditch, I used that inadvertently. It's a rather unfortunate phrase, because within the unionist community, many people did die in ditches.
Mm-hmm.
And people who were very close to Arlene Foster, for example, mm-hmm. like her own father, were shot by the IRA. Despite that, I mean, the ARG coalition for Sinn Féin. Now, it's pretty hard to make that kind of government work. When we get to something like coronavirus, there's another fault line that gets exposed, which isn't a sectarian one. It's the one that exists in every country in the world that's trying to cope with this. The conflict between those parties on the right, which tend to kind of put the economy first. You see this very much in Trump's America.
Yes.
In the economy. And those parties which tend to be on the left, which say no, people first. And so you get that conflict, and in a minor way within the executive, where within the unionist parties is more a kind of feeling that we ought to get with the Tories, the British Conservative Party, on this. And within the nationalist community, the feeling that Boris Johnson, as one Sinn Féin member put it, Boris Johnson is a balloon. I'm not sure if that's completely a Belfast expression, but I think you get the meaning. The feeling was, look, why don't we ditch the link with the UK on this and go with the South because they've got better policies. Well, actually, they might have better policies, but they didn't show a huge amount of regard for the North when it came to things like, for example, when they announced the lockdown, they didn't notify the Northern executive in advance. Whenever they announced they were changing it, they didn't notify
really
the North executive. No. And when they were challenged about this, Regina Doherty said, well, we had to tell the Irish people first. And you listened to that and okay. You thought, my God.
Wow, what are we?
Have you any idea how the nationalist community in the North hears that? What happened was surprising and very welcome. What happened was that in the end, the DUP and Sinn Féin decided to kind of temporarily, and I stress temporarily, but decided they would, for this period, forego their own loyalties to their parent governments, as it were, in Britain and Ireland, and just go their own way as a Northern Ireland government. And that's what they've done. And so when they announced last week the easing of the lockdown, Arlene Foster and Michelle O'Neill stood side by side, and there was no difference between them. I mean, in the run-up to all of this, we've had a few solo runs by Sinn Féin. We've had some spats, and that's inevitable. You get five parties sharing power, and of course there's going to be disagreements. But here's the thing. The community cohesion that I've described to you is now also there for this moment at the level of government. And so we've got this really, I was going to say unprecedented. I'm not an historian, but an historian would challenge me and say, well, look, you know, during the 1932 outdoor relief riots, you had this Protestant Catholic working class unity, which you did. It lasted for about an afternoon.
Yeah.
Very few times in the history of the North where you actually get this form of social solidarity. It is very hard to produce the evidence for it. Amnesty International did a survey.
That's right, yeah. I was going to ask you about that.
The percentage of people who, you know, had, you know, spoken to a stranger or gone out to clap for carers or whatever. And it's pretty solid evidence that here we've got a new mood in Northern Ireland. It's a mood that's born out of crisis. When the crisis passes, you know, I'm not too rose-tinted about this. I think we will revert to the norm. But I wanted to express to this was simply in conversation with my friend Andy Pollock, that whatever they think in the South, it's not worse up in the North. It's not grim up North. That actually we're coping with this crisis pretty well. We think people in the South are coping with it pretty well. We'd like if we could all do this in as close alignment with each other as possible. But at this time, and for the first time that I can remember, the people of Northern Ireland are pretty unified.
Okay. And is there a sense of that on the street?
I think so. I mean, this isn't one of those occasions, and it can't be one of those occasions where people can actually come out in solidarity, because one thing that we've always done throughout the whole history of Northern Ireland is whenever there's a significant political moment, you go down to Belfast City Hall and there's a unionist rally or a nationalist rally. Well, we can't have that. There's no way of coming out. But we do come out on Thursday nights, and we do come out in Catholic West Belfast, and we do come out in Protestant East Belfast, and we do come out in the leafy suburbs. Yeah, I mean, it's a solidarity that runs, you know, across social class and across the religious divide.
You said there when I introduced you initially that a lot of your time was spent looking at how things were progressing or otherwise in relation to the Good Friday Agreement. Is everything in Northern Ireland measured since the Good Friday Agreement? Is it measured in terms of who it benefits and how it benefits and where next we can maybe balance things out if there was an imbalance there? Is every single little thing monitored?
Yes. I have to say, yeah, everything in Northern Ireland breaks down, you know, along the sectarian lines. I mean, it's just how it is here. I was explaining to my son there that, you know, they were doing these, they do these daily announcements now on coronavirus, and they've taken to using signers, you know, for the deaf.
Oh, yes.
And in Northern Ireland, you have two. You have one using the British Sign Language and the other using the Irish Sign Language. It's not the Irish language, incidentally.
Yeah.
They're just two different sign languages, so they have to use two. And that's just one small illustration. everything does break down in terms of that historic divide. But on this one, people are pretty unified.
You mentioned the power-sharing executive and literally just up and running before the COVID-19 crisis occurred, which is probably a very good thing. And you mentioned that Sinn Féin, that the nationalists and the unionists are working together. They've put the past somewhat behind them to get this done. When you look at what happened in the South after the February general election, where Sinn Féin got the most number, basically, of votes, but Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are still 100 and odd days after the election, struggling to put a government together at a time when it's quite important to do so, all because they don't want to give Sinn Féin the power or include them in the power. Has that altered how our government, our Irish Republic government, would be seen both in unionist and national eyes in Northern Ireland?
Yes, it has. I mean, well, you say altered. It's probably more a matter of confirming existing beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The belief amongst among Sinn Féin supporters, that would be seen as just part of how dreadful the Free State traitors are. You know,
right.
No surprise there would be their view.
Okay.
Unionists are dismayed by it. Because they feel there's a double standard all the time. I mean, this came out, if you remember, with the shooting of Garda McCabe, and when we got to the Good Friday Agreement and the release of prisoners, there was a feeling in the South that, we support the Good Friday Agreement, let the prisoners out. And then somebody said, well, what about the guys who shot Garda McCabe? They said, well, no. You couldn't let them out. And to unionists, it was, well, what about all those RUC who were killed? I mean, what's the difference here? So there is that feeling that there's a hypocrisy in the South that, let's put it like this. You know, Arlene Foster's father was shot by the IRA. He wasn't killed, but he was shot. Mm-hmm. She was on a bus when she was a schoolgirl. The IRA put a bomb in that school bus. I mean, who puts a bomb in a school bus? Mm-hmm. Well, the IRA did. So Arlene Foster now shares power with the political party most associated with the IRA.
Yeah.
So whenever unionists hear that Fianna Fáil have a bit of a difficulty sharing power with Sinn Féin, you think, really?
Why would that be?
So, there is a let's put it like this. They don't tend to get too inflamed about it, but there is a wry amusement at the delicate sensibilities of the two southern parties.
I'm going to finish with you because I know that you've given me enough time at this stage, but I'm going to ask you just one more question, if I may. And that concerns the difference of approach between the Republic and the North of Ireland. And at times you could hear people wanting to say, why don't we just stop people coming in from the North into the Republic? Yeah. Which would mean putting a border up or putting somebody somewhere saying you can't come in. And that caused a huge difficulty, I would imagine. And I would imagine that the unionists were waiting to see what will happen here. And is it possible that somebody will say no? Was there a sense of that?
Some people picked up on that, you know, you had Sinn Féiners from Buncrana and places saying, you know, we need to stop people coming in from the north. But I think it was well understood that that's actually happening, say, in Wales with people coming in from England or, you know.
But didn't Wales actually say, stay at home, we don't want you?
They didn't say, exactly. Yeah. They said, stay at home. So it wasn't an hostility to people from the north as an ethnic group or as a religious community. It was simply a health precaution. So I think it was understood as that. I mean, there may have been a little bit of hurt feeling from some people, but by and large, I think people accepted that we've all, in this extraordinary circumstance, had to accept extraordinary measures. So this was just one more extraordinary thing that people expect will pass.
And really, finally, we don't know when this whole COVID thing is going to go away or when it's going to allow us to get back to some normality. How long do you think this outbreak of kindness will last?
I'd love if it could just continue.
Yeah.
I think that when we revert back to the norm, there is no normal anymore. It's, you know, this phrase that everybody uses, the new normal. I hope the new normal in Northern Ireland will carry with it some of the social solidarity that came through this. And incidentally, and I'll just come in on this point finally, that when you mentioned that the political parties in Northern Ireland coming back into the executive, the people who drove them back into the executive were actually the nurses. It was the nurses' strike. There was a crisis here in the health service, and the nurses come out and strike, and the people of Northern Ireland got behind the nurses. Okay. And the nurses shamed the politicians to getting back into government. And so it's the support for the nurses, again, the nurses and the doctors and the frontline staff, that is sustaining this at this time, this feeling that we're all in this together and we have to support the people who are, you know, making so many sacrifices for us. And I think that changed our sense of values. I mean, when you get the Orange Order deciding to cancel the 12th of July and put all their efforts into, you know, raising money for PPE, when the bonfire groups decide they're going to scrap the bonfires this year and put money into food parcels, you know,
that's incredible. Yeah, incredible. All right. It's been fascinating listening to your opinions and thesis on what you call the outbreak of kindness in Northern Ireland since COVID-19. Dr. Paul Nolan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. All the best now. Bye.
Oh, the summer time is coming and the trees are sweetly blooming and the wild mountain thyme grows around the blooming heather. Will you go, lassie, go? And we'll all go together to pluck wild mountain thyme all around the blooming heather. Will you go, lassie, go? I will build my love above near yon pure crystal fountain, and on it I will pile all the flowers of the mountain. Will you go, lassie, go? And we'll all go together to pluck wild mountain thyme. True love he were gone, I would surely find another where the wild mountain thyme goes around the blooming heather. Will you go, lassie, go? And we'll all go together to pluck wild mountain thyme.
There's a band that you heard not so long ago on the programme, and you heard a conversation between myself and David Sanders and Tom Cusson from Shaskeen during the start of the celebrations for the launch of their new album, which is called Live in Concert, Shaskeen, Live and Kicking. It's on release, it's a double CD, and it is available online if you would like to get your hands on it. The beautiful voice that you heard there in that song or on that song was that of Katie Teasby, and you've heard me interview Katie previously on the programme as well. So there you go, Shaskeen, Katie Teasby, and Will You Go, Lassie, Go. I am going to take a very quick break, come back to me just after that. I will be talking to my old pal, Kevin Keane, about what he has written in relation to COVID-19. And we'll be taking the number one song in Ireland on this day, back in 1965 as well.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. And a lot of people have been giving this whole COVID-19 thing a lot of thought. Some people have been writing songs and poems and little letters and stories about it. There'll be probably films and all sorts of things in the years to come. As you know, we regularly talk to a man from Ennis in County Clare called Kevin Keane. Well, he's actually from out the road. He'll tell you about that himself. And he's a regular for putting pen to paper when certain things happen. He joins me on the phone now. Kevin, good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm very well, Ger, thank you.
As per usual, you're always in good old form. Of course, you're not from Ennis originally. You're from out the road.
I am from a disadvantaged area called Kilnamona.
Disadvantaged area. I'd say no, it hasn't been disadvantaged of much down through the years. There's been plenty of representation at local and national level from that area.
Well, I went to school. I went to primary school in Ennis. So
you're practically a native. Anyway, Kevin, you've been pondering on this whole COVID-19. How have you been managing, you and the family? Have you done all right?
Oh, fine. We're fine. Sure. They're mostly all around us, bar one. We have one in Australia, but the rest are Doolin, Rouen, Kilnamona, Tulla, and the Tulla Road.
Oh, God, huh? So, plenty of help. I'd say there isn't a stick of furniture in the house that hasn't been painted and varnished and stripped and painted and varnished
that's
again.
For sure, Ger. That's for sure.
Great.
That's for sure.
And the good weather in Ireland over the last wee while has helped everybody to kind of keep a positive outlook, hasn't it?
Oh, God, I think so. I think the goodness part of us, which had been lacking for a while, has come out, you know.
It has. So, let's hope it stays.
With the help of God, yeah.
Now,
surely.
You've been pondering the whole COVID-19 thing, and when you ponder, you tend to do so with a pen in your hand, and you have put pen to paper for us.
I have, Ger. I'll read it out for you now, Ger.
Do, please.
I wouldn't be able to memorise it even though I wrote it. These lines I am writing as each hour passes by. A certain section of society does not really comply. As we sit in isolation, avoids the dreaded COVID-19. It's very important to trace the places we have been. A new word in the English language is that we are cocooned, like the mariners of old who often got marooned. Our present location is like being locked up in jail, while the outside world is praising Simon, Leo and Fine Gael. The media presents us each day with medical views, and Trump in his wisdom said it's just all fake news. Reality now surrounds us and we are in lockdown. Can't walk in our local park or venture into town. Trump now is fighting back to say he's got a cure. Inject ourselves with Dettol and we'll recover for sure. All this nonsense is an insult, and saying all will be fine. Tell to the doctors and the nurses on the front line. Now, when all this is over, a new route we must take and give more attention to the mistakes that we make. Keep a 2 meter distance. It's the measurement of the year to keep ourselves healthy and the ones we love so dear. Chinooil.
Ah, isn't that lovely? Absolutely gorgeous. Sure. A wordsmith extraordinaire, I think you could be called.
I don't go too far with that now.
What are you calling me, he says. And Kevin, what are you missing most since this whole thing started?
I'm missing meeting a lot of lads that we used to meet on a regular basis.
Mm.
As you know, we'd go to Gleason's for a pint. And yeah. I used to do a few hours Wednesday, Thursday and Sunday night in Gleason's, and I miss it big time. It's not for what I was getting for the ordeal, as we put it like that.
the
people coming in and the crack. And,
of course,
you know,
I'd be looking forward now. They're talking about having table service. I look forward to popping in when you're on duty and your little penny on you.
Maybe you'll come to the counter for it because I won't serve the tables.
Ah, there you go. Kevin, lovely to hear from you as per usual. Continue to stay safe and well, you and the family. And sure, I'll see you on my 5K walk at some stage.
You will, Ger. You will, of course. Sure, it's great talking to you too, Ger.
Thanks, Kevin. Chat to you soon.
Right, Ger.
Always a joy to talk to Kevin on the programme. Now, I did say that I was going to play the number one song in Ireland on this very day, the 25th of May, back in 1965. And here he is, no stranger to the listeners of Live On Era, Mr. Dickie Rock. That song was at number one in Ireland on this very day back in 1965. The wonderful Dickie Rock and the Miami Show Band when he was fronting the Miami. And a song called Every Step of the Way. And isn't it great to hear the old, former colleague of mine, former mentor, I suppose, of mine, used to say the rashers and sausages on the vinyl. The crackling and the snapping that used to go on. Anyway, great song it is too. Now, I have just received some information that I omitted when I was doing the famous birthdays a little earlier on. It turns out that our good friend Des Egan, if you were listening a couple of weeks ago, you would have heard me interview and have a good old chat with Desi Egan. Des celebrates his birthday this coming week as well, on Thursday to be precise, the 28th of May. So Des, a very happy birthday in advance to you. And we got a chance to take another track from you. Not today, but maybe next week on the programme. Fingers crossed on that one. But in the meantime, have yourself a nice birthday. Patricia Traynor is somebody that we have stories from on a regular basis. And Patricia got in touch with me a little earlier in the week. And she said, Ger, the cinemas are closed, but you might be interested in having a look at the following film. It's just been released and it's available to see online. And she obviously picked this up from El País. And it's the story of the Spanish Armada, taking us back to 1588. And if you follow, I'm going to post the link on my Facebook page, which is Ger Sweeney. Just put it in Ger Sweeney and you'll find me. And if you go to Twitter, just at GerSweeney67, you'll find me there on that. I'll post the link on both of those locations, all right, a little later on for this. But right now, if you go to elpais.com/cultura/2020-05-22. Right. And the name of it is Los Irlandes, Nos Sacan, S-A-C-A-N, Los Colores. And that's how you will find it. All right. Los Irlandeses, Nos Sacan, Los Colores. Patricia, thanks a million. And I hope during the week, if we get some bad weather, I won't be going golfing. We may as well get out as much as we possibly can. If I get a chance, I'll take a look at it. Now, speaking of Patricia, you may recall a number of weeks ago, one of the stories was a fascinating story about the O'Donnell clan and how Hugo O'Donnell, a direct descendant of Red Hugh O'Donnell, is living in Madrid. He's the overall chief of the O'Donnell clan. Well, an excavation is underway over the last week or so in a place, now I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Valladolid. And it's in Spain, Valladolid. And the search is to recover the remains of ancient Irish chieftain Red Hugh O'Donnell, who died and was buried there back in 1602. Now, archaeologists have said that they believe that they are close to finding the remains of the Irish chieftain Red Hugh O'Donnell as they excavate that area in Spain. On the 22nd of May, reports from the excavation site revealed that bones, a skull and a femur had been uncovered, and archaeologists believe that O'Donnell's remains would be relatively easy to identify, as he was missing toes following a case of frostbite that he incurred while hiding in the Wicklow Mountains after escaping from Dublin Castle, where he was imprisoned. Donegal News in Ireland reports that the man kind of behind all of this is a Donegal man by the name of Brendan Rohan. He visited the site in Spain last year to search for O'Donnell's burial site. Of his visit last year, Rohan told the publication, of course, he said it was a fruitless search as I was passed from Billy to Jack and searched many blind alleys for 3 days until I met the director of cultural tourism who had a graw for Ireland, and I enthused him with the idea. He passed Mr. Rohan then on to the director of archives, who more or less told him that he was wasting his time because in the secularization of Spain back in the 1800s, that whole property was sold and levelled and the gravesite was lost. Now, anyway, things have moved forward. An excavation has started on the site and they're hoping that there will be some news. We will keep our eye on that story and we will take another look at it at some point in the future, but I wish them well. I have no idea how this song sprung into my head during the week, but it did. And I haven't heard it, and I don't know, did I play it on the programme before? It's taking us back to 1980, and it was a big hit back then, and it took the country by storm. It's a grand old funny story, the story of Lanigan's Ball. And here's the Bards.
Friends, right here, on the Bower, this is Julie.
In the town of Athy, when Jeremy Lanigan battered away till he had the pound, his father he died. Made him a man again, left him a farm and 10 acres of ground. He gave a grand party to friends and relations who didn't forget him when come to the wall. If you but listen, I'll make your eyes glisten at rows and ructions at Lanigan's ball. 6 long months I spent in Dublin, 6 long months doing nothing at all. 6 long months I spent in Dublin learning to dance for Lanigan's ball. I stepped out.
I stepped out. And I stepped in again.
I learned to dance for Lanigan's ball. Easy, Julia. Settle down. Myself to be sure, got 3 invitations for all the nice girls and boys I might ask. Just in a minute, both friends and relations were dancing as merry as bees round a cask. There was lashings and punch, wine for the ladies, potatoes and cakes, there was bacon and tea. There were the Norans, the Dorans obeyed, he's courting the girls and dancing away. They were doing all kinds of nonsensical polkas all around the room in a whirly gig, till Julia and I soon banished their nonsense and tipped them a twist of a real Irish cheek. Oh, that girl, she got mad at me, danced, you think the ceilings would fall. For I spent 3 weeks at Brooks Academy learning the steps for Lanigan's ball. 6 long months I spent in Dublin, 6 long months doing nothing at all. 6 long months I spent in Dublin learning to dance for Lanigan's ball. I stepped out.
I stepped in again.
I stepped out.
And I stepped in again.
I learned to dance for Lanigan's ball. The rhythm is good now, Julia. The boys were as merry, the girls all hearty, dancing together in couples and groups. Till an accident happened, young Terence McCarthy, he put his right leg through his Finnerty's hoops. The creature, she fainted and cried, Melia Murther called for her brothers and gathered them all. Charmity swore that he'd go no further, he'd have satisfaction at Lanigan's ball. In the midst of the row, Miss Kerrigan fainted, her cheeks at the same time as red as the rose. Some of the boys decreed she was painted, she took a small drop, too much I suppose. Her sweetheart Nick Morgan, so powerful a neighbour, when he saw his fair girl he stretched with the wall. He tore the left leg from under the table and smashed all the dishes at Lanigan's ball. 6 long months they spent in Dublin, 6 long months doing nothing at all. 6 long months they spent in Dublin learning to dance for Lanigan's ball. I stepped out.
I stepped in again.
I stepped in.
I stepped out again.
I stepped out.
I stepped in again.
I learned to dance for Lanigan's ball. Hit that bar on. So vices, then there was ructions. I took a lick from young Phelan McHugh, but soon I replied to his fine introduction and kicked him a terrible hullabaloo. On Casey the Piper, he nearly got strangled. They squeezed up his pipes, fellas chanters and all. The girls and their ribbons, they all got entangled. And that put an end to Lanigan's ball.
6 long months I spent in Dublin, 6 long months doing nothing at all. 6 long months I spent in Dublin learning to dance for Lanigan's ball.
I stepped out.
I stepped in again.
I stepped in.
I stepped out.
I stepped out.
And I stepped in again.
Learning to dance for Lanigan's ball.
Julia, Julia, step out there, woman, and show 'em how it's done. Girl. I like it. Magic. Magic. Sakatoon, baby.
The story of Lanigan's Ball, that comes from the bards from all those years ago. Right, that's my lot for today. I sincerely hope that you have enjoyed the programme that I put together for you. Can I say thank you to everybody who took part in this week's programme, Dr. Paul Nolan. That was a fascinating conversation, and I'd like to find out more. As I said to you, that resulted from Andy Pollock's blog, The Two Irelands. And again, if you'd like to Google that and find out more about Andy Pollock, and hopefully at some point in the programme, the next few programmes, I will get Andy to talk to us about what he's been doing over the last number of years. And it was because of José Antonio Sierra, who is our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor on the programme. And sometimes people say to me, what does your man Antonio do for you? That's what he does. He looks for stuff like that. He sent the blog, the Andy Pollock blog, to me. And from there, I got in contact with Andy and then with Paul. And that's how today's interview came about. So that's the kind of stuff that José Antonio does. He's very good at it and spends a lot of time at it and makes sure the things are right. So thanks very much to our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor, José Antonio Sierra, for looking after us and the programme on a weekly basis. Can I say also a big thank you to Kevin Keane. Kevin's a great old character, and he's been writing those stories that you heard today for many years. And I didn't want to say it when he was listening, but or when he was with us, but his family put together a little book of some of his writings over the years. I know he and I recorded a few, and I know he was in session with the late Pat Costello before Pat died to record some of them in Pat's studio as well. So we might get to hear more of them as the time goes on. Anyway, my time has gone. It's time for news at the top of the hour. We've got tech news or tech talk just after that. Look after yourselves in the coming week and each other. Enjoy the freedoms, but don't abuse it, and stay well and stay healthy. Until we meet again, from me, Ger Sweeney, thank you for listening. Bye-bye now.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.